Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, each year some 40 million Americans move into a new home. And anytime 40 million people do anything, there will be those who look to make a quick buck by dishonest means, but tell you how to protect yourself from moving scams. Also this morning, happening around town, this is the big one. Downtown Findlay's Spring Art Walk is this evening, featuring dozens of artists and performers, along with more than 40 shops, restaurants, and studios. We'll get a preview. And a special collection of birthday dessert recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Friday, May 3rd, 2024. Are you a member of the middle class? This, I thought, was really interesting. Smart Asset, the financial website, calculated the income that would be required to actually fall into the middle class for 345 American cities. And these were large cities, so of course, Findlay not included in this list, but There were several Ohio cities on the list: Toledo, Columbus, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Dayton, so on and so forth. So anyway, what they found was not surprisingly, a wide range of incomes that would be required for you to actually fall into the statistical middle class, depending on where you live. Again, not really surprising. Now, for their calculations, a middle class income is figured to be between two-thirds and double of an area's median income. So that would be right there squarely in the middle. In Sunnyvale, California, which is home to a lot of tech companies, so probably not surprising the threshold is much higher, you would need to make at least $113,176 a year to achieve middle-class status. In Detroit, on the other hand, which is the lowest city, the bottom city on the list, the lower limit is only $25,000. You make $25,000, you're middle-class in Detroit. Several California cities are way up there requiring an income of over $100,000. In addition to Sunnyvale, San Mateo, Santa Clara, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Cleveland is the Ohio city with the lowest middle class income threshold and income range. If you make between $24,898 and $74,702, you are considered middle class in Cleveland. So the low threshold is actually a little below Detroit, but Detroit actually is the bottom spot on the list because the upper threshold is a little less than it is in Cleveland. So that's how they calculate. Cleveland, the Ohio city with the lowest middle class income range. What is the top city in Ohio? That would be Columbus, with a range of $41,147 to $123,454 you would have to make in order to be considered middle class in the city of Columbus. No. Actually, Toledo is fairly high on that list, which I thought was a bit of a surprise. I expected it to be further down the list, but that's where things rank. Let's see, some of the other most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your TGI Friday morning started. If you need something to do this weekend, we got a lot of things going on. We got the Downtown Findlay Art Walk tonight. Springtime in Ohio Craft Show is going on at the fairgrounds over the weekend. If that's not your speed, however, you may be interested in the Toledo Tattoo Festival, which is getting underway today at the Glass City Center downtown. It says here over 200 tattoo artists from all over the U.S. and internationally are expected to be on hand for the three-day event. TattooToledo.com for all of the details. I just thought I would point it out. Tattoo Fest. Toledo. Man. Let's see. Here is some good news. Seniors today, and we're not talking about like high school seniors or college seniors. We're talking senior citizens. Seniors today may be sharper than previous generations. I was so happy to see this, number one, because I'm approaching that age, and number two, because we always hear bad news, especially with respect to aging, so it's nice to hear something positive for a change. According to a Nottingham Trent University study, as older adults are performing better in general than previous generations, it may be necessary to revise definitions of dementia that depend on an individual's expected level of ability. This according to study author Stephen P. Badham. Expanded access to education, along with advances in healthcare, nutrition, and standards of living, are some of the factors that they theorize are giving older people an additional brain boost. A youthful mind, they say, may not just depend on personal choices, but on societal progress as a whole. But long and short of it is, older folks these days are sharper than previous generations were at the same age. So, always like a little good news. Here, what is your worst habit? What is your worst habit that you would like to quit? The website GoSmokeFree.com analyzed Google searches across all 50 states for more than 800 terms related to breaking bad habits. And this is a lot of data that they analyzed. 1.95 million, nearly 2 million Google queries a month were surrounded stop gaming or quitting gaming, video games. And when one thinks of bad habits, playing video games might not be the first thing that immediately pops to mind, but that is number one on the list, according to the Google search data. Now, I guess it should be said that if you are looking to quit video games, you'd probably go to an online search engine for help with that. Whereas some other bad habits, maybe you would search for ways to kick the habit, maybe you wouldn't. But anyway, maybe the results are skewed a little bit, but it is kind of interesting. Playing video games, the number one vice, the number one bad habit that we would like to quit, or at least cut down on. But nearly 2 million Google queries a month on how to stop video gaming. Coming in second, eating fast food. 1.6 million asks per month on how to quit. A distant third is people asking Google some 490,000 times a month on average how best to stop snacking. Snacking. You want to quit doing that. Just don't eat. I don't know. Is that a compulsive thing? Like smoking? Smoking was on the list, by the way. In the top 10, but it is kind of interesting related to smoking that I would imagine 10, 20 years ago, that would have been at the top of the list. And we have many Americans have already kicked that habit. So it falls down the list. Some of the other things we most want to quit: bullying, lying, social media. Although, again, I would argue that if you're searching on the internet on how to stop, you know, quit social media, maybe you're fighting a losing battle. And energy drinks. Energy drinks we'd like to quit. Quit drinking those. A couple of the other most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Friday morning started. We're coming up on vacation season. Disneyland is unveiling a new ticket deal for the summer. Oh boy! You want to take the family to Disney starting on May 29th? You can buy a 3-day, one park per day ticket for the weekday or weekend. The weekday ticket can be used Monday through Thursday, starts at $149 for kids, $249 for adults. Wow. Now, again, that's 3 days, three different parks. The weekend ticket option for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday is a little bit pricier. It starts at nearly $200 for kids and about $300 for adults. So about $50 more. The special ticket deal can be used from June 10th through September the 26th. That is, again, it's 3 days, but still, man, $200 for kids, $300 for adults on the weekend. Maybe the only person who can afford that, or one of the few people who can afford that, are the is the woman in Massachusetts, Christine Wilson of Attleboro, Massachusetts, who beat some pretty incredible odds in the state lottery. Now, let me first of all set the stage here. In Massachusetts, the 100 times cash game is a $10 ticket, $1 million prize, the odds of winning 1 in 1.6 million. The odds of winning $1 million in the lifetime million game, lifetime millions game in the state of Massachusetts, 1 in 8.4 million. Christine Wilson of Attleboro, Massachusetts, beat both those odds in just a little over 2 months. Can you believe this? In 2 months, she claimed her first $1 million prize in the Lifetime Millions $50 instant ticket game back in February and completed the highly improbable duo in the 100 times cash $10 instant ticket game 10 weeks later. She chose to collect both $1 million payouts as one-time payments of $650,000 before taxes. She says she plans to use her first lottery payout to buy a new SUV. The second was earmarked for savings. She beat both of them in the course of just 2 months, little over 2 months. Man. Why can't I have that kind of luck? There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your TGI Friday morning started.
This is ONN. I'm Jay Fox on the Ohio News Network. Case Western Reserve University President Eric Kaler released a statement yesterday saying that the university will no longer allow an on-campus protest over the Israeli-Hamas war. Kaler said he made the decision after some protesters broke temporary rules set up by the school for demonstrations on the Oval outside Smith Library. It is now considered trespassing and a violation of university policy. President Biden declared a major disaster area in the state of Ohio in response to the tornadoes on March 14th. Andrew Kinsey with ONN affiliate WBNS-TV in Columbus reports.
In Logan County, three people died from those tornadoes, and around the state, many were displaced and are still in the process of rebuilding. The president's declaration will help provide money for temporary housing, home repairs, and loans for those.
11 counties will benefit from this statewide. The state of Ohio has begun to clean up its voter rolls. Secretary of State Frank LaRose directed county election directors to begin a routine but enhanced hunt through the voter rolls ahead of November's election in an effort he says is legally mandated to remove inactive registrations. These include change of address, past due removals, inactive status, and information mismatches with the Bureau of Motor Vehicles. Voters listed as inactive will have one final opportunity to prevent their registration from being deleted. For the Ohio News Network, I'm Jay Fox.
Well, each year, some 40 million Americans move into a new home, and 80% of those moves happen in the spring and summer. And of course, anytime 40 million people do anything, there will be those who see it as an opportunity to turn a quick buck, often unscrupulously. Last year, the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration launched Operation Protect Your Move to crack down on moving scams. And with that time of year now upon us once again, we are joined this morning by Tom Liberatore, the director of the Office of Enforcement and Compliance with the FMCSA. Tom, it is truly alarming, the increase in the number of reports of moving scams that you have seen over the past 5 to 10 years.
Yes, Chris. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me this morning. Absolutely. We, between 2015 and 2022, particularly right at the tail end of the pandemic, we saw about a 50% increase in the amount of complaints that came in to our National Consumer Complaint Database. Fortunately, you referenced Operation Protect Your Move. Over the past 12 to 18 months, we've seen those start to come down by about 30%, 36%. But still, there's a lot of fraud going on within the moving industry that consumers at least need to be made aware of.
Yeah, and we don't want to disparage an entire industry here. We're talking only about 10,000 or so complaints out of 40 million moves. So, it's still not altogether common, and still you don't want to be part of one of those 10,000. So what are some of the most common scams, and what are the warning signs that people should be on the lookout for when hiring a mover?
Great point and great question. So absolutely, we've been working closely with our industry partners. The vast majority of the household goods moving industry wants to operate legitimately, but like anything else, there's always that small, very small percentage that, as you said, try to take advantage of individuals, particularly at a time when a lot's going on with them and they're looking to move and you have a lot of other things to focus on.
Right.
In terms of common issues that we see, the hostage complaint, what's referred to as a hostage load, where an individual is quoted a price for a load, someone comes and picks up their household goods items, and while they're in transit prior to delivery, they're informed of a substantial increase in fees that they would need to pay in order for their loads to be delivered. So we get a good number of those. Also, we get a good number of complaints on what you would expect: lost items, damaged items, they're not answering my call, it's taking too long for my stuff to be delivered, and then, of course, requests or comments about misrepresentation. Definitely some of the things to look out for are, do they have information on their website? Are they asking you to sign blank documents? Do they have verification of their fee sheet, their insurance coverage, their surety bond? Those are all things you want to ask for. We go through this in a lot more detail on our protectyourmove.gov website, where we have a lot of information for consumers, particularly those in interstate moves, where they can go read this information and really bone up on these types of questions that they should be looking for and asking their movers when they hire them.
Are these more commonly found with the bigger moves? You referenced interstate moves as opposed to just moving across town?
That's a great question. I mentioned interstate because it's a federal agency. Our authority is in interstate moves. We do have a lot of partnerships with several states and several state entities and about 11 different jurisdictions that we have active engagement with their consumer protection agencies and their attorney general's offices and such. It does occur in both. We do get complaints for people that are moving within a state, and we try to refer those to the appropriate state agency.
Yeah.
But we also encourage the complainant to contact and investigate who the Consumer Protection Affairs Office is within their state for those reasons.
One of the things you mentioned, signing blank documents or being asked to sign blank documents is a big red flag, and that holds true not just with moving, right, but in any situation. You don't want to sign any blank documents. What are the factors that one should consider before signing a contract? What are we looking for that should actually be on there?
Right. So you are, and we do, as again, go through this in some more detail on our resources on protectyourmove.gov, but you want to make sure that there's a clear written estimate. You are required, or they are required, at least at interstate moves, and most states mirror this as well, that they are required to give you a written estimate. It can be binding or non-binding, but it's supposed to be a detail of what it is that you're having moved in your house and what the costs of that are going to be. You want to also make sure that there's clear information on what's called their tariff, or essentially their fee sheet. What are the fees they're supposed to be charging you based on either weight, size, valuation of goods, that type of information. Also want to ask about their surety bond, their insurance coverage, is everything up to date? And lastly, you really also want to make sure, are they a broker? So if you're contracting with someone, are you contracting with a broker, or is it the actual moving company that's going to be carrying your items? There are several legitimate brokerages. They operate completely within the boundaries of the law. But for your own awareness, it's always good to ask that question, because one, they may not be, or and two, just for your own information to know, are you the one taking my items or is this going to be offered to a third party? And how do I find out who that is?
And if a problem arises, what is the first thing that someone should do if they suspect fraud or they have a complaint or they have an issue that they can't resolve?
So we would ask them to go to our protectyourmove.gov website. They can file a complaint in our National Consumer Complaint Database. Even though we don't represent individual consumers per se, we do use that information to address it as part of our ongoing enforcement efforts within the household good industry. And if there is some assistance that we can offer to the consumer or at least point them in a direction as to where they can go, we will try and do that. They should also contact their local consumer protection office within their state to ask them what resources are available to them. They should also check our documents on protectyourmove.gov because we walk them through their rights to request arbitration, their rights to engage in court filing, in terms of what those rights and responsibilities are for them as a consumer.
And what happens once your agency gets involved, once the FMCSA gets involved in a case?
So there's a couple things that can happen. You know, we do receive a lot of complaints. A lot of information comes into the NCCDB, which is our National Complaint Database. We will evaluate the information. If we need some additional details, we may reach back out to the individual. We may contact either by email or by phone to say, hey, can you give us some more information as to what happened? And then in many cases, if there's sufficient information, we'll document it, maintain it as part of the records on this carrier. We also have a registry of carriers that, I should have mentioned this earlier, that you can search. If you're engaged in an interstate move, you can go to our website and search to say, hey, are they legitimate? Are they still active? Are they registered? So that's one thing they can use that for. And then we will often partner with our regional offices in FMCSA if there is an investigation that can be initiated into that carrier or if it should be referred, you know, through a state entity or something along those lines.
The bottom line message here is that all of that can take time and it's just one more hassle. Just emphasizes the point that you really need to do your due diligence when you're going into a move and make sure that you do everything possible to make sure that you don't end up in one of these situations.
Absolutely. It's the old adage, forewarned is forearmed.
Yeah.
So do your research ahead of time. Avail yourself on the resources we have on protectyourmove.gov. And the best protection is to prevent yourself from getting into this situation.
Absolutely. Tom Liberatore, again, is the director of the Office of Enforcement and Compliance with the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, talking about Operation Protect Your Move. And Tom, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Chris. Thank you.
Well, it is going to be a very busy weekend around town, and it all begins this evening with Downtown Findlay's Spring Art Walk, featuring literally dozens of artists and performers, along with more than 40 shops, restaurants, and studios. Danielle Wilkin of Visit Findlay is with us this morning. And Danielle, this is the big one. I mean, I know we do this now once every season. We're doing Art Walk now, but this is the one I think that I look forward to the most because this is the real big one.
Yeah, me too. I think it's nice because it's kind of like we're all coming out of hibernation.
Right.
You know, we had a mild winter this year, but still, like, this is like the spring, it's awakening, it's time to get back out there, see everybody, and it's going to be a really good time.
Well, I always think of it, you know, Mother Nature is, you know, putting out her best artwork this time of year with all of the flowers in bloom and the blooms on the trees and everything. So this kind of just amps that up a little bit with
exactly.
Art Walk. As we mentioned, literally dozens of artisans and performers and more than 40 shops, restaurants, and studios participating this year. It's a big art walk.
It is. I think this is the biggest one we've had in recent history. So this is definitely one that you want to get out and check out.
And some of the highlights, there are, like we said, there are too many to list them all. But I want to hit some of the can't-miss stops, some of the featured stops. One would, of course, be the Jones Building.
Yes, always. You know, the Jones Building is such a hidden gem in our community. And this time around, there's over 10 artists that are opening up their studios. Janila Killebrew is going to have a student artist that she works with that does animal art. So you definitely want to stop by Studio 4. Phil Sugden's always one that you want to check out. Laura Barnhart Coral is one that you always want to check out. You know, Amber Keir of Hysteria Company, she's celebrating 5 years. I could name all of them because they're all wonderful artists, and it's a one-stop shop, and you can kind of see all the professional artists in our community, a lot of the professional artists in our community, and they're all great.
And
wonderful.
You know, that's one of the things some people may not realize is that we have a number of artists in the community that are nationally known. So, you know, we are certainly blessed by that. And the Art League is holding their annual member show this weekend as well, right?
Yeah. Yep. So this is this is the opening reception for their member only show. It'll run through the month of May.
Okay.
However, this is the first night. You want to come and see it tonight. It's always special to kind of see the local talent that we have. I think that they said they have like over 120 pieces in this show.
Wow.
And the nice thing is that the Jones Building and Finley Art League are right next to each other. So it's a one-stop shop.
Mm-hmm. One of the other places that you have to swing by is the Marathon Center for the Performing Arts. A couple of things going on. We were mentioning earlier in the week, they're going to do their Wall of Fame induction ceremony this evening.
Yes. Yep. They're doing their Wall of Fame starting at 6 o'clock, but then they're also going to have live music throughout the evening from Reverb and the Guitars for Vet band. It's called AWOL. And then also in the Fisher Wall Art Gallery, they're having an advanced student exhibit, which is just always really cool to kind of see the local young talent as well. And that kind of goes into the Finley Inn. The Finley Inn is hosting a student showcase from 5 to 6 p.m. there. They're having Fermata the Blue, which is Liberty Benton's a cappella, Una Voce, which is St. Michael's show choir, Nightlife, which is Van Buren's a cappella, as well as the Association, which is Van Buren's show choir. So all of those in one go from 5 to 6 at the Finley Inn.
Also over at the Findlay Hancock County Public Library, they're featuring a student showcase, student art showcase as well. Very special showcase.
Yeah. Yep. And they're also going to have Finley String Factor, and Fermata the Blues going to leave from Finley Inn and go over to the library. so it's going to be a really fun night.
Yeah. The library has got the Awakening Minds art student showcase and a tiny art show. It says there, and also a silent art auction at the library. That's all at the library, right?
The silent art auction is at Massage Professionals of Ohio.
Okay.
So it's
sorry.
Just a little
Excuse
bit
me.
Down the street.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
So make a note of that. But all of those things.
It's easy to get them mixed up.
I know.
There's so many of them.
all of those things going on. And again, lots of shops and restaurants that will be open. So it's about more than just the art.
Yes. Yeah, and that's the kind of the neat thing about Art Walk is it spans the entirety of downtown from Front Street all the way down to the Hancock Hotel at Hardin. You know, artists are located within there. Musicians are located in those businesses. Shops are open late just to go shopping. Restaurants and bars are open with specials. You can grab a Dora drink. It's a really, really fun night to be in downtown Finley.
And by the way, all of it is free. The admission and so on is free. And, you know, you can control how much you spend if you want to get dinner, or you want to purchase some of the art that will be for sale and so on. But you can go down and spend nothing if you want to do that.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. Yep. It's a free family-friendly event. We want to see as many new faces as well as familiar faces in downtown to check things out.
So give us all the details. Art Walk happens tonight, and you basically start right after work.
Yep, exactly. You can head downtown beginning at 5 o'clock. Activities run for the most part until at least 9 o'clock, but there's several things that run past that. You can park wherever. That's legal, I guess.
right.
But you can get the full map and list of artists and things like that at visitfinley.com/artwalk.
That's what I was going to say. We do have the link up at our webpage for more information. Again, because there are literally more than 40 participating restaurants, shops, and venues to this. There's too many that we could list them all. I don't want to leave anybody out, but there are so many participating. You're definitely going to want a map to help you plan out your evening, and we've got it linked up at goodmornings.net. Big celebration of downtown and our local artists' art walk happening this evening. And Danielle Wilken from Visit Findlay, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
I'll forewarn you, it's a bit of a light day in the broken news this morning. That doesn't mean that we don't have anything. There's always something unusual going on, but it is a bit of a light day. I did see this story, and how many of us can relate to this? Because I think we've all lost something when we've gone on vacation. Have you ever had that? You come home and you think, oh my goodness, I lost this, that, or the other thing. You know, forgot to pack it, lost, left at the hotel, maybe lost it somewhere along the way, who knows. Pennsylvania man, Joey Henney, had that experience. He lost his emotional support alligator while on vacation in Georgia. His emotional support alligator. He says the animal has helped with his depression over the last decade and is often seen hugging. Mr. Henney is often seen hugging Wally, the alligator, like a teddy bear. Hugs his emotional support alligator like a teddy bear. Unfortunately, Wally the gator somehow got free from his enclosure in Brunswick, Georgia, on April 21st. Mr. Henney fears that someone stole Wally, and now he is pleading for the public's health, for the public's help. We need all the help we can to get my baby back, he says. You may remember, this is not the first time that Wally the Gator has made headlines. Wally achieved internet fame some months ago when he was denied entry into a Philadelphia Phillies game. You remember that story? Yeah, that was Wally the Gator, and now he has gone missing. So be on the lookout for Wally the Gator. Emotional support alligator. I've heard it said, actually, in all seriousness, I've heard it said that alligators can be trained. Crocodiles can't, but alligators can be trained. I don't know how well they can be trained, and I'm not in any hurry to find out, but be on the lookout for Wally. Speaking of unusual animals and moving from place to place, the Transportation Security Administration, the TSA, discovered something unusual at an airport checkpoint. Snakes in a would-be passenger's pants. As according to a TSA post on social media, a green camo bag containing two pink serpents was found at a Miami International checkpoint on Friday, April 26th. The animals have since been turned over to the Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission of the state of Florida. The unnamed passenger was reportedly attempting to board an international flight with snakes in his pants. Didn't they make a movie about that? I don't want no more of these snakes on this plane. Passengers are reminded that every airline has its own policy for transporting animals. Be sure to do some research before traveling. Generally, snakes in your pants are frowned upon. Speaking of flights, this was kind of weird. Japan Airlines reporting the cancellation is apologizing to their passengers for the cancellation of a flight from Dallas to Tokyo last week But they explained that it was unavoidable. The pilot reportedly got drunk and became disruptive. The pilot. I've heard of passengers becoming drunk and disruptive, but this was the pilot. After the flight was canceled on April 23rd, the airline placed all 157 passengers on other flights, presumably to the same destination. We're just going to throw you on another flight. You end up where you end up. No, they put him on other flights to Tokyo. The 49-year-old pilot's name has not been released, but he reportedly was drinking with fellow crew members at a restaurant and then at the hotel bar and then in his room prior to the flight. He became so loud and disruptive, hotel staff had to call police around 2 o'clock in the morning. So the airline, it says here, decided to cancel the flight as a precautionary measure. Yeah, probably. Probably a good idea. The pilot got so drunk, the hotel called the cops. Probably not a good idea. Closer to home, the Macomb County Sheriff's Office in Michigan. Macomb County, Michigan. Sheriff's Office is looking for a man who, I can't believe this, a man who threw a bag of bunnies out of his vehicle on Monday. Deputies were called to Potomac and Shoal Drives around 7 p.m. on Monday after a citizen reported the incident. Sheriff's deputy was able to bring the animals to the Detroit Animal Welfare Group, where 7 of the 8 bunnies survived and are now being cared for. Witnesses say the suspect was driving a smaller red Chevrolet and was younger to middle-aged. A bag of bunnies out the window. What is wrong with some people? Man, I don't know what this world is coming to. And finally, in the broken news this morning, a woman from the town of Shirley, New York. Shirley, you can't be serious. I am. Shirley, New York. Woman is being accused of selling Ozempic and other weight loss drugs illegally on TikTok. Authorities say Isis Navarro Reyes posted videos marketing the weight loss drugs. However, officials say they were counterfeit, and in some cases, the drugs contained bacteria. One victim developed lesions after taking the medication. Prosecutors say Ms. Reyes is not licensed to sell the drugs, surprise, surprise, and by doing so caused significant and in some cases life-threatening injuries to some of her victims. Now, I am not against people, you know, taking a side hustle, make a little money, and there are all kinds of ways that you can do that online. But generally speaking, and I suppose nothing is universal, but generally speaking, let this be a bit of a consumer warning to you. If you encounter someone selling weight loss medication on TikTok, maybe want to be a little suspicious. That's probably not on the up and up. Probably not legitimate. Just so you know. There you go. That is today's broken news report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
We tell the stories of our men and women in the military and first responders each Sunday morning on WFIN. Hi, this is Ben Bueller Garcia, your host for American Warrior Radio. Our mission is to educate and inform the public not only about those who serve, but those who support them. We also share issues of importance to veterans and their families. Join us for American Warrior Radio, Sunday mornings at 6 on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Have you ever had the dreaded check engine light come on in your car? Maybe you're driving around with the check engine light on right now. Americans, on average, ignore the check engine light in their car for 4 months before doing something about it. 4 months before we address it. This according to a new survey of 2,000 car owners commissioned by Pep Boys. 20% say they actually wait between 6 and 18 months before doing anything about that pesky check engine light. 32% say they wait as long as possible without defining a specific time period. And 39% will wait for something to actually break before bringing their car to a mechanic. And obviously, you don't want to do that because those little problems, often inexpensive problems, relatively speaking, can grow to much greater problems, bigger problems, more expensive problems, more costly problems by ignoring it. If you ignore it, it's not going to go away, is the moral of the story. Although the reason why we ignore this in many cases is easy to understand. 48% push back checking their check engine light because of financial reasons. We're worried about how much it will cost, even though 35% also admit they later regretted putting off that maintenance because it only gets more expensive. It's quintessential catch-22. You know it's going to get more expensive if you ignore it, but if you can't afford to address it, you know, it is a put you in a tough spot. Some of the car repairs that stress Americans out the most, in order, according to the survey, engine problems, brake issues, fuel system trouble, exhaust system repairs, and tires. So those are the top five most stressful issues. And again, especially with things like brakes and tires, you do not want to delay those things, put those off. I mean, they all are safety-related issues, but especially with brakes and tires, you don't want those to fail in the, you know, while you're driving down the highway. Nothing good can come from putting those things off. Well, as you may already know, because I mentioned it at the beginning of the earlier this week, my wife Kyra had a birthday this week on the 1st.
Yep.
And so I made a big deal about it on the air. And because it's her birthday week, I have a special collection of recipes from Kyra's kitchen this morning. We have birthday dessert recipes.
Yes.
So why not?
Why not? You don't need supper. Just eat dessert.
And, I mean, this is perfect because everyone has a birthday.
Yes.
So everyone has someone to make these desserts for.
Oh, yes. So, most definitely.
Special collection of birthday dessert recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. My wife, Kyra, is with us in the studio this morning. And first of all, we have a recipe for brownie bombs.
Yes, so these are one of my favorites. I love these.
That. Brownie bombs.
There we go.
All right.
So this is a half a cup of butter softened, a half a cup of brown sugar, 3 tablespoons of white sugar, 1 tablespoon of peanut butter, a half a tablespoon of milk, half a teaspoon of vanilla extract, 1.5 cups of flour, and a pinch of salt. And then 1.5 cups of miniature chocolate chips divided, 1 box of cosmic brownies, and 1 package of chocolate almond bark. So with your electric mixer, beat together your softened butter, your brown sugar, your white sugar until that's all smooth. Then mix in your peanut butter, your milk, and your vanilla extract until one well blended. Then gradually add your flour and your salt to the mixture. This is going to make like your like a cookie dough sort of consistency.
All right.
Okay. And then you are going to line a baking sheet, shape your dough into 1-inch balls, cut the brownies and shape them into 1-inch circles. They don't have to be perfect because then you're going to put your cookie dough ball on top of your brownie and then kind of form it to it.
Okay.
And then you're going to put them in the freezer for a little while.
Okay.
Okay. So I would say in the freezer for about 45 minutes. You can also put them in the fridge. They're just going to have to be in there a little bit longer. This freezer kind of
just to firm them up.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. And so then melt your chocolate almond bark according to the package instructions. Dip each brownie bomb into the melted chocolate, allowing all the excess chocolate to drip off. Place the dipping balls on foil and sprinkle with your remaining chocolate chips. Chill the chocolate chip cookie dough brownie bombs until the chocolate coating is set. Store them in an airtight container in the fridge or freeze them until you're ready to enjoy them.
So you put them back into the fridge or the freezer, and that firms up the chocolate on the outside. You get that crunchy chocolate shell to it.
Yes.
The brownie bombs.
I love these. They're yummy.
Dessert number two on our list are coffee cupcakes with a mocha buttercream frosting.
Yes. I made these last week for an event at our church, and they are amazing. So one chocolate fudge cake mix, a half a cup of vegetable oil, 1 3/4 cups of cold coffee, 3 eggs, quarter teaspoon of cinnamon, a pinch of nutmeg, and 3 tablespoons of instant espresso powder. And then for your icing, that is 1 cup butter at room temperature, 4 cups of powdered sugar, 3 tablespoons of cold coffee, 1 to 2 tablespoons of milk, 1 tablespoon of instant espresso powder, and 2 squares semi-sweet baking bark, and that's melted. So preheat your oven to 350 degrees. Line your cupcake pans with your liner. Mix the cake mix, the oil, the coffee, the eggs, the cinnamon, and the nutmeg, and the espresso powder in a medium bowl. Mix for about 2 minutes with an electric mixer. Evenly distribute the batter among the cupcake liners. Bake the cupcakes for about 20 to 25 minutes or until a toothpick comes out clean. Allow the cupcakes to completely cool. For the frosting, you're going to cream the butter until light and fluffy. Then slowly add your powdered sugar, and then add your it's going to become almost a crummy. It's going to seem kind of bumpy, crummy, but that's okay. And then once you add your liquids, your coffee, your milk, that will smooth it up and whip it, and it'll just be real nice and creamy. And then add your espresso powder and your melted chocolate. Beat until nice and fluffy. Frost your cupcakes, and then dust them with some of your espresso powder, and top with a chocolate covered espresso bean if you like, and enjoy.
There you go.
They're very good.
And dessert number three is a fresh, and this is more of a traditional type of recipe.
One of my favorites.
This is a fresh and easy strawberry pie.
Yep. This was always my request with my mom when she would ask me what I want. I like cake, but I love pie. And so this is one of my favorites. Strawberry pie.
Strawberries, not exactly in season yet.
No, but
The fresh and easy strawberry pie.
Yes. So 3/4 cup granulated sugar, 3 tablespoons of cornstarch, 1 1/2 cups of water, 3 ounce strawberry gelatin, such as your Jell-O brand, 2 pounds of fresh strawberry sliced, 1 baked pie crust, 10 inch, and French vanilla cold foam for your topping. So in a saucepan over medium heat, combine your sugar, your cornstarch, and water. Whisk until the mixture is nicely thickened. Remove from heat. Add your strawberry gelatin. Whisk that until all the gelatin is dissolved. Cool the prepared strawberry mixture and slightly, then fold in your strawberries. Spoon the prepared strawberry pie filling into your baked crust. Make sure your crust is baked beforehand.
Mm-hmm. Because you're not going to cook it after you add the
strawberries. You're not baking it.
Yeah.
So make sure your pie filling or your crust is baked and cooled. Then put your filling in. Refrigerate until it is set and completely chilled. And then top each with some cold foam and enjoy.
Yeah.
So very easy.
that's what makes it easy is the fact that you're not actually baking it.
Right.
So
yes.
With the recipes for the brownie bombs, the coffee cupcakes with the mocha buttercream frosting, and the fresh and easy strawberry pie can all be found at the WFIN, or I'm sorry, the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page, at Kyra's Kitchen WFIN on Facebook. That's where you find all of those recipes. We also have it linked up at our webpage at goodmornings.net. So make sure that you like the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page for all of the latest recipes there, including those birthday dessert recipes. And if you have something that you would like to have featured, you've been searching for a recipe for a good something or other, you can let us know about that. We'll put Kyra on the case. Or if you have a favorite recipe, whether it's for a main dish, side dish, dessert, whatever it might happen to be, you can share that with us via the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page as well. You can put it on the page. You can message us. You can also email us at goodmornings@wfin.com. We'll get it to us as well. Yeah, my wife, Kyra, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. That, of course, goodmornings.net. Coming up Monday morning on the program, the two biggest issues in this year's presidential campaign are immigration and the economy. We speak with an expert who says fixing one will help fix the other, but no one is really serious about doing either. So until Monday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day, a great weekend. We'll catch you back here next week.